This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and I recently decided to give Sterling Soap Company's Ground Breakfast Blend coffee a try. While brewing, the aroma was inviting, and the taste? Lightly sweet and delicious, as the texture of this amazing coffee was sweet and smooth, as I experienced a coffee with a velvety texture, almost creamy. Sterling's breakfast blend is light but in no way weak, with a high quality taste and smell. My wife and I are now hooked on Sterling Soap coffee, and you should be too. Check out their coffees and other products at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
This is our league, and this is your league. Broadcasting from the 55-yard line in Japan to the shores of the Great White North and everywhere around the world on Gridiron America Radio and the Sports History Network.
Everybody, welcome back to Gridiron America. It is Greg, Dave, Mike. We're it's been about a month since we have sat here and talked because I was out stateside here last month, and good 2.5 weeks. That felt like 2.5 months, and now we're back in studio and at a perfect time. I arrived back here in Japan a week ahead of the CFL season. And right at the end of the UFL season. So this past weekend, we got a lot to catch up on. Dave, Mike, good to see you guys. And how are things?
Good. Looking forward to a completion of one season and the start of another.
Yep, that's exactly it. Glad to have you guys back together. And definitely looking forward to the end of the UFL and jump right into the CFL.
Yeah, definitely. Cause there's a lot that, especially in the UFL end that I missed, even while away, I caught some of the games, but I wasn't able to, really spend too much quality time to, sit down and watch with my schedule. And, when it came to obviously the CFL preseason was in full swing, which for the first time that I can remember, this is the first summer that I've actually watched the CFL from game one, sitting here in Japan. Other summers I've been somewhere else, when the regular season starts. So I'm just happy to be back and talking football again. And we'll be going, straight ahead here through the rest of the year, Cause to me, football season kind of officially starts when the CFL starts playing. And I know Dave and I were talking, Mike, I think you were offline prior to coming online before we started to record, but I made the comment that Dave, for me, spring football is always hard just watching because there's so many things going on. And I don't know if it's just a seasonal rhythm, but to me, things don't really start until the CFL starts playing in terms of my thinking, well, it's autumn now, or we're going into autumn. So that's just my take, but what do you guys think? And before we start even talking to CFL, we got to talk UFL.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, to piggyback on what you just said, Greg, it's definitely tough. You've got March Madness, then you have the NHL finals, you have the NBA finals. There's a lot of stuff going on. MLB opening week, it's always in the spring. So the UFL instantaneously is competing against a lot right off the bat, whereas we get past Memorial Day and we're starting to slowly creep into fall. CFL's opening kickoff just feels more like football season. But it's definitely, I guess spring football is better than no football. Right. And only being a 10-week season, it takes some of those guys 3-4, maybe even 5 weeks before they really are a cohesive unit. But I think toward the end of the season, the last 2 or 3 weeks especially, really those teams that were on the bubble, you really seen who were contenders and who were pretenders. So you know, Louisville really stuck it out. St. Louis did. And then you had teams, other teams just fall apart, you know, that nightmare in Dallas, Columbus falling apart. And then really the same with Birmingham. They fell apart at the wrong time, but the contenders will rise and others will fall. So it was definitely the last few weeks, all the way into this weekend, has been really exciting. So it'll be exciting to see what happens starting next week.
Dave?
Agree 100%. And it's good to see, too, with all this crowded landscape in the springtime, that ratings were up, which has always been one of the key things. It's always either attendance or ratings. And it's good to see that on both ESPN and ABC, you had a really good uptick for the games. I mean, to average almost 950,000 people a game on ABC is tremendous. After everything we just talked about going on this summer, I don't think you could have asked for anything better. I mean, yeah, of course you'd want 10 million people watching, but let's be realistic. To average that through the season is great. And the same thing with ESPN. To average 700,000 people a game on your ESPN telecast, that's awesome. I mean, we're talking about a league that was struggling in a lot of people's eyes, a new owner bringing in new expansion teams into different markets, and to see an uptick. And then, I'll be honest, they had some really exciting games today. I mean, this was two really good games. If you're looking to watch points, I know one of the criticisms of the UFL, going back to the XFL and the USFL and even the leagues before this, was offensive productivity. And these offenses were moving the ball. I mean, both games, the scores were in the 20s. You saw points put on the board. You had 2 4-point field goals today by Louisville, which was just utterly amazing, which at the end of the day, just about put the game out of reach. I mean, you can get the 9-point play and all that stuff, but what's really your chance of really succeeding on that play? So heading into the championship game, I know I think this was a heck of a season for the league. And I there's so many, for me, it's so many positives moving into next year.
Do you guys think the league has turned the corner?
I think they have to. I think.
No, do you think that this season they've turned the corner? Because I know in seasons past, it just seemed like when the season started, all these great promises and expectations, and then, you know, with ratings and attendance, things started to kind of, I mean, things either quickly declined or gently declined, but either way, they declined. It seems to me, just based upon what I'm seeing numbers-wise, that the UFL, at least in the ratings, they've held steady this year.
Yeah, I would say when you look at it, you can look at it one of two ways. You could look at it as attendance in some markets declined each week, and other markets it stayed consistent. On the other hand, you look at the TV ratings. There's, like Dave was saying, it seems like every week the ratings got better, and for ESPN and for Fox and ABC, it was some of the highest rated programmings they had outside of your college football and your NFL. Like it was really good ratings. Some markets that returned from last year seen as high as a 15% increase from the year before. So, you know, I think that they did turn a corner, even regardless of what the attendance at some stadiums look like. You know, it breaks my heart to see what's happening with the fallout in St. Louis with filled the dome just last year, and now they're having trouble getting people into the dome. But, you know, again, in the grand scheme of things, via streaming and other resources to watch the game that's not the stadium, I think that it's doing really good for the league.
And for me, I think they've turned the corner in the aspect of, I think this is the least amount of money they've lost. I don't think they're making money yet, but I think they have really honed in on what they need to do. And I think they really positioned themselves into a positive moving forward. I think they've really identified what will work and what will not work for them. And I can see a few more, a few more changes, not drastic changes, but I can see a few more changes to get them where they want to get to. Because I think 1 year is not enough time to do everything they want to do. But I think they saw enough of the positive of what they want to do to get there after next year. So I'm really curious on expansion. I'm really curious on state of some of the teams right now. Are they going to be moving? Not so much expansion, but relocating a couple teams just for not maybe nothing against the cities themselves, but I think it really they need to find the best places to play, the best leases for them to play in to give them the best opportunity. So as an example, does that mean you have to, no one wants to see the Birmingham Stallions move, but it can't be cheap to play in that big stadium. And it doesn't look good when you get even 10,000 people, which is a marked increase from past years. But if you relocate that city, relocate that team to a city with a 20,000 seat stadium, and you get that exact same crowd of 10, the place is jumping. The place is looking great. And you probably, with the leverage that they have as a league now, with what the product that they have, I think they can identify leases on stadiums as a possibility to make it cheaper. Because as much as everyone wants to play in the Dome in St. Louis, that has always been by far the most expensive place to play. Hopefully they whittled that price down, but at one point it was $100,000 a game.
Really?
To play $100,000 a game. If you think about it, it's a 50,000 seat stadium. That thing is.
Yeah. And it's a stadium that doesn't get used at all. I mean, outside these games and maybe one additional college game or two additional college games a year.
And remember, the Rams left for a reason.
Right. Yeah.
The stadium was beyond what it should be for professional sports. They put a nice turf in, which is nice. It was a nice little band-aid they covered over. But realistically, it costs so much money to open that place up for security. It just adds up. It just adds up quickly. So I'd be amazed if they're paying more than $20,000 a game for historic Crew Stadium, because it was the very first soccer stadium built. It was very basic, just steel. Like, there's not a lot of – it's an easy security cover compared to what the Dome is when you look at the grand scale of that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And, you know, talking about that, I mean, Michigan – I mean, they left Michigan for that exact same reason. The cost of renting the Dome there was just way too high. And –
I've been there. It's a gorgeous stadium.
Yeah.
It's an unbelievable stadium, but there's no way you're going to get in there for less than $100,000. It's just, it adds up so fast, everything you need to do. Like,
yeah,
I can't imagine like the cost of throwing that air conditioning on for a couple of days is insane. Yeah. Like it's things like that.
Right. Well, and then it begs the question too, what St. Louis might do just to, you know, minimize costs. Will they move? Because there's a new outdoor stadium in St. Louis, I believe, a soccer stadium along the riverfront that gorgeous. They could move to. But again, it's an MLS stadium. Or no, it's not MLS. It's UFL. Or not? Or USL? Right?
No, it's NWSL.
NWSL.
It's a Kansas City Current that play there.
Wait, Kansas City Current play in St. Louis?
It's a weird situation in how they all work. But there is another St. Louis team, but
like, wait a minute, you lost me on that one.
The Indiana Bears.
That would say it's like Chicago Bears in Indiana.
What is it? Where, the Chiefs? Wasn't there talk of the Chiefs moving to Kansas?
Yeah,
there's a few different options. Like there's a nice St. Louis. There's a few different options that I've heard.
Okay.
I know. It's finding that 20,000 seat stadium that they need to play in. And that's with the USL and NWSL, those are the places to play in. Like Louisville is a great example.
Yeah.
Great example.
Yeah. So talking about the UFL, let's talk about the games. We had the semifinals today. We had, and what, the first game we had DC winning over Orlando, and then we had the second game had Louisville winning over the Battlehawks. So you guys, I was geo blocked out of the games, so I'll be trying to catch the games, at least one of the games later, on a replay. But you guys watch both games. What happened? Give us your give everybody your thoughts, because I'm just gonna, like everybody else listening, I'm gonna sit and listen to you guys talk about the games.
Yeah, I'd say start with the Orlando DC game that was played in Daytona. Number one, a great turnout. We'll start with that. For the game to be moved from Columbus back to Florida on really what was short notice, kudos to the Floridians for making that stadium what it was for the game. As far as the game itself, I think it really was a back and forth shootout up until the end. A few bad breaks for Orlando, and then DC capitalized on it. But it was, all in all, it was a fun game to watch. And David, I'll let you talk about the St. Louis game, but I think both games were equally entertaining. It was, in my opinion, some of the best, the two best games thus far of this season.
I agree completely. We were talking pre-show. I did not see DC pulling this one out with the injuries that they had earlier in the year, and then turning to Jason Bean, who I made the comment here. He played the best first half of his season in the semifinal game. It was nice to watch. It was really good to see players perform, as they say. So it was one of those things where neither one of these games a team lost it per se. It was teams playing and earning it, and that was great to see. And turning into the Louisville St. Louis game, once again Louisville turning it on the second half of the season, and playing, they picked the right time to play their best game of the season as well. I was very critical on Chandler Rogers this year, on just on his gameplay, on his game management. But once again, walking through these games, both DC and Louisville in this game, they pounded the ball on the ground and just controlled the offensive line for a lot of it. I mean, Louisville averaged over eight yards a rush. It's just crazy. Really think about that. 8 yards a rush. And they scored when they needed to. They put together good drives, and anytime that you can go and beat Luis Perez in a playoff game on national TV, you've earned it. I mean, the king of spring football. So, and then at the end of it, when you're looking at special teams, every highlight package is going to have Tanner Brown's field goals. Those are sweet kicks, both over 60 and 63 yards to get 2 4 pointers. I think that was the first time this year they had 2 4 pointers in the same game. And it was fun to watch. Now, the one question for you, and I didn't catch this, Mike, was Hakeem Butler hurt at all for St. Louis? Because he had a really quiet game, and I didn't see anything mentioned about him being hurt. So I was just curious if you had heard anything.
I haven't heard anything, but you could just tell by his body language and his mannerisms, he was definitely off. He was frustrated. So I don't know if he had a bad week of practice leading up to the game, or maybe tweaked something during warmups or early in the game. But yeah, I definitely noticed Butler was definitely off. But again, to your point, kudos to both teams. It doesn't matter if it's spring or fall or any level of football. When you get in the postseason, you have to be fundamentally sound in all three phases. And really the most important part is you have to be able to successfully run the football. And I think we've seen that with both the winners today. Louisville, they figure out how to run the ball. And I think for a while they had an identity crisis at quarterback. So maybe it was just Chris Redman taking the quarterback under his wing and just getting him situated. But again, props to Louisville and Chris Redman for figuring out their identity. And then for DC, I believe it was the running back for DC who was first team UFL. So especially after their quarterback went down and Jason Bean took over, it was predicted, you know, DC was going to be one dimensional, but I think they also played well balanced football and they also found their identity as well. But again, going back to your question about Hakeem Butler, I don't know, he just seemed really, it was an off game for him, if anything else.
Okay. And then my final comment on the United Bowl is be interesting to see Jason Bean lead DC against his team he started this season with Louisville.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. As you guys know, I'll be in attendance there, so I'll be excited to see how many DC fans have since booked their ticket now that the home team is in the championship game. So definitely looking forward to the presentation from opening kickoff to the halftime show to the trophy ceremony. So it's going to be a fun weekend. And also DC is also having the UFC Freedom 250 in town as well. So there's going to be a lot of people, a lot of opportunity for folks nearby between the Nationals playing the UFC event. Hopefully the folks wander into Audi Field and they get to see a good football game.
That town's going to be a security nightmare.
Yeah.
Between what's going on in the White House and between everything else going on. Yeah. Imagine being stuck in traffic in DC. Cause I've been there stuck in DC traffic. It's not fun.
I do not want to drive
nearby and I'm going to be walking to every event.
Yeah. Well, if you see Mark Perry, tell him I said, hey, and ask him, and you know, you of, you know, Mark Perry, editor of the old XFL News Hub, who, I don't know if he's still predicting that the Argos are going to go to the UFL, but you know, if you see him, ask him. Which
there's still time.
There's still plenty of time. Which gets into my segue of talking CFL. So CFL kicked off this weekend. Week one, we had three games. Did I cover everything with the UFL before I start before we start digging into? Because we covered the St. Louis game, we can't cover the Louis. We covered the other game, so we're good there. So before I segue in,
are you going to do a live report from the stadium?
I might give a little a live stadium update during the game.
You know what? Maybe we'll do that.
Facebook Live.
Maybe we'll do that because you know, do a post game report if you can find one of our other friends and he'll. One of our other good friends, maybe he can make an appearance too. So, but yeah, no, if you see Mark Perry, ask him if the Argos are still going to the XFL or the UFL. Cause I posted, you know, just talking about that CFL, you know, we're going now from UFL, which I still, to me, is the old XFL. I don't care how people, the XFL pretty much took over the USFL and, you know, we are where we are, but, I wrote something yesterday on our website at gridironamerica.net. Just, you know, I was kind of reminiscing about the CFL XFL war of words back in 2021 when the two leagues had a cup of coffee about if they were to talk about merger, what would those merger talks look like? And it just set off a firestorm online for like 4 months. So I was kind of reminiscing about it. So I posted a little little thoughts about that whole time. Plus two, a great, you know, the old Mark Cast. There was a great episode of the Mark Cast, which, the great CFL XFL debate, which if you even go back and listen to it now, it's still worth listening to. I miss the Mark Cast. Reed always put on a great show. Didn't always agree with him. But he always put on, him and Paul always put on a great show and had some good thoughts. So it's probably their most entertaining episode, even better than the one that I was on way back when in 2021. So, but there's a bit, okay, so we've got the CFL week one, but before we kind of get into that, or maybe we can talk about it after, a lot of shit's been happening with the CFL even prior to kickoff between, okay, you had a new media deal. And I know, you know, prior to this, we had new rules. And I mean, just so much has changed with the CFL in the last, God, even what, the last year, where we're going, that's ahead. So, Dave, where do you, you know, you and I both caught the games. I know, Mike, you weren't able to watch all the games this weekend. Mike, I'm sorry, Dave, where do you think we should start with the CFL talk here for the rest of the show?
I say we just cover the three games real quick.
Okay.
And then go through with the media and franchise news. And I think that'd probably be the best way, because there's so many different things to talk about with that, with those deals. So
right. And the CFL was kind of, I mean, this whole show started as a CFL history show. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to dig into. And okay, so the first game we had, the kickoff game, Montreal and Hamilton. And for those, and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sure seemed like, listen, Hamilton lost this game more than Montreal winning this game, but there could be an argument both ways. What do you think?
It'll be depend on who you're a fan of. If you're if you're a Ticat fan, you gave it away. And if you're an Alouettes fan, you came back and took it. So, I mean, that's just really how it boils down to. I mean, it was a back and forth CFL game.
Yeah.
Which is what you want to have. I mean,
it was an overtime game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Both quarterbacks threw for over 300 yards. They both had good numbers. I mean, you end up having Davis Alexander having a couple touchdown passes. You didn't get that. You didn't get that same result from Levi Mitchell. But he threw one touchdown pass. Just happened to be to the Montreal Alouette cornerback who stepped in front and took it back. But he looked. I mean, he was 34 of 39. He looked great. I mean, without getting touchdowns, he did everything you asked of him. If you walked in that game going, if you had told me once again, like the morning of, Levi Mitchell is going to go 34 for 39 and over 300 yards. Like, we got a good chance of winning this game.
Yeah.
We got a really good chance of winning this game.
But the fact that, you know what? And I didn't even, and again, it's been a few days since separated from when the game was played.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you too, because it was like the first game and I had other stuff going on. Yeah. So I was watching and I did not realize until kind of we got, you know, I kind of looked back at everything. I'm like, holy shit, he didn't throw any TDs.
No, but the thing is, and here's the weird part about the CFL, and maybe it's just me. It just seems like if your touchdown pass isn't more than 10 yards, then it seems like that's what the backup quarterback is for.
Yeah.
Or with the extra yard, you ground and pound there because you're automatically going to get that 1 or 2 yards on your run.
Right.
So, I mean, they had a 1 yard run by the fullback. Then you had quarterbacks sneak. Like, so
yeah, Dolagala, he scored on a one, you know.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things where you don't necessarily, if you're at the 4 yard line and you got the goalposts in front of you, granted they say that doesn't affect anything. You have two shots or you have or a third run. So it's just one of those things where it's just a product of the game more than, where you are in the field and the play call you do than necessarily Mitchell not getting touchdown passes, because he was very effective throughout the game.
Yeah. Mitchell, you know, Bo did not lose this game for Hamilton.
No.
I mean, this was not on him. I'm always, when it comes to the Eastern Division games, I'm always partial to any team from Quebec. So to see Montreal win, I was happy Montreal. And again, Hamilton, they have the same colors as the Pittsburgh Steelers. So that also works against them in my book. But
and my last comment about this game, Davis Alexander still undefeated in regular season play in his career.
Yes. And that was the one stat that I saw that, again, haven't been away from the CFL because it's been a long time since November. I didn't realize. I'm like, holy crap. There's just things, especially as I'm approaching 60. So the memory's starting, in many ways, the memory is selective and it's starting to fade a little bit early in certain things. But when it came to that number in terms of his, the dude is just, I mean, record wise is just incredible. He has talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers, very Ben Roethlisberger win-loss stats is somebody new. Because if you remember, Ben Roethlisberger as a rookie was like 15-1.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, that was a good game. And, you know, it wasn't it went down to the wire, overtime, and that's what you want. I mean, that's what you want every game to be, which goes on to the next game. The next game we had Winnipeg and Calgary. And let me put the score here. The Winnipeg game was 30-28. This is a game where you could easily say Calgary lost it, literally gave it away.
Yeah, they should have won this. I'm saying you should have won a game by 10 points is kind of crazy in sports, but I thought that was a game it seemed like they took their foot off the gas. I don't know, it just seemed weird. They're going into halftime with so much momentum, and then to come back out in the second half and just, it seems like the wind just, it's like they went at halftime like, all right, we're up 21-16. We got this.
Yeah.
It's like, and all of a sudden they came back out in the second half. It's like Winnipeg does what Winnipeg does. It's just,
right.
they grounded and pounded with Oliveira enough to get him in position for Kolaris to make. He's not what he used to be, but you don't need him to be that.
Right. Huh.
So they moved the ball and did what they had to do. And then, I don't know. It just seemed like Calgary has so much more potential than Winnipeg does. Mm-hmm. And to see that not happen, and granted it's week one and there's so many more weeks left to go. So, but still it was an interesting, it seemed like a tale of each quarter. Like Winnipeg won this quarter. It was like a boxing match.
Well, it's Calgary, like, well, you know, boom, going boom, into the second quarter, after the second, you know, the second quarter, Calgary scored 21 points.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, and then, but that was it. And then they scored. But like you said, with Winnipeg, they were steady throughout the game. They were consistent. Yep. I mean, just numbers wise, they were consistent quarter to quarter. Yep. But yeah, after that second quarter, I kind of figured, you know, Calgary's got this thing won, and then, you know, they just let it slip away.
Last play of the game. So technically, it was just like the overtime game because as the clock expired, Castillo kicked the field goal to win it.
Right.
So it was one of those things where Calgary was up 28-27, and it took him making a 38-yard, 40-yard field goal to win it.
Yeah. So I mean, it was a great game. I mean,
you can look at Calgary, the player's face when that kick went through. It's like,
yeah,
like, are you kidding me? Like, really? We just lost?
Yeah.
Wild.
And then so that was a great game. And then we move on. Hang on, let me pull up my pull up here as we're sitting here.
Edmonton, Ottawa. This was my surprise. I was surprised about this game.
I was very surprised too, because I'll let you speak to that.
Well, I was first curious on Jake Mayer starting. Obviously there was a relationship with Dunwoody and him, so that's why he got the nod. And granted, it sounds like he played better than Drew Brown in training camp anyway. So it was not far-fetched, but it just seemed for, I want to say, the first three quarters of this game, Ottawa was just out of sync. It just seems like they were just on different, there are different playbooks with inside the huddle. And granted, look, it brand new offense, brand new defense. You have a whole different type of scheme for everything.
Right.
They've brought in a lot of new players. I get it, but I was still, you still have Eugene Lewis. I mean, you still have good players. Now Greg Bell was scratched late. So that threw a little monkey wrench in for the running game. Cause when your starter's out, but it just seemed that Edmonton was so much better prepared for this game. And granted, they basically had their same offensive starters from last year. So it wasn't like Austin Mack is new, but he played with Fajardo in Montreal. So there's a relationship there. Mm-hmm. But it just seemed like Edmonton came to this game so much better prepared for the first game of the season. And it just seemed like right from the first snap, Ottawa just was playing catch up all night. And they just, they just could not. And they, like I said, they made it was only eight at the end. They made it look.
They were competitive towards the end, but
yes, the fourth quarter was by far their best quarter.
Yeah.
Even though they scored, they got 10 points in the second quarter, but the fourth quarter, they looked so much better. So like I said, it's going to be a good year for them. It's going to be better. Look, at least from what you saw, look, it's going to be better than what it's been the last few years, but it was a very slow start for them in my eyes.
Right. Right. And the thing is too, with the CFL season, cause it's so long. I mean, really to me and Dave and Mike, maybe you guys agree or disagree with me, but the first 2 weeks of the CFL season to me always seem like preseason because of the numbers of games that are played and the fact like this week, past week, and next week, you've only got three games being played each to even things out. So to me, I mean, like Ottawa, I was hoping to see a much more improved Ottawa team and maybe – you know, but them going up against Edmonton to me is not the measure of where they're at. Because Edmonton, as the graphic showed during the game, how many years it's been since Edmonton's actually been in a playoff game? I mean, it's been a long time. So they've been a franchise that's been kind of just, you know, ever since they became the Elks instead of they dropped the Eskimos name. It just seems like they're still trying to find an identity as a winning franchise, a winning organization. So that's just my takeaway. But again, it was week one. And also too, the Ottawa game was played in the rain and the elements. That probably factored in a little bit, you know, with the turf and everything. But yeah, overall, first week of CFL, you know, and you guys again watching the UFL this weekend. It's been a good week of football. So I'm looking forward to being able to, you know, some point later today, because it's raining here in Japan, and I got some quiet time that I'll be able to hopefully at least watch one game, if not two games. Hopefully somebody, there's a pirate replay feed somewhere on YouTube to watch the last game of the weekend with the Louisville. The last game of the weekend was the Louisville game, right?
Yes.
Was Louisville over St. Louis. So hopefully somebody out there has done an inappropriate thing and put it on YouTube so I can watch it. We got one other game that's going on this weekend, but we'll talk about next week. And that's the LFA Championship. It's on ESPN2, at least according to the website. So hopefully, all of us will be able to get a chance to watch that this week, because the LFA is entertaining. The problem is this year their games are not on YouTube, so it's kind of a hard league to follow. So with all that said, with the CFL and UFL and even Alpha, did I miss anything? Because we're going to go into the next part talking about what's going on with the CFL prior to the start of the season.
No, I would say I share the same sentiment with the LFA. It's years past, you could watch it on YouTube. And then this year, it's exclusive to Disney Plus if you're in Mexico. And I've tried with VPNs and logging into my ESPN Plus account or my ESPN Plus account, my Disney account. I still have no luck finding those games. So it's really a shame if you're outside of Mexico, you're missing some good football. So hopefully they do at least put the championship game on for everyone else outside of Mexico to see. But yeah, I mean, we'll see about that. But the CFL, you guys hit it on the head. It's off to a great start. There are some teams that just came off firing all cylinders. And then there's some teams that you guys also mentioned that are trying to find their identity. I think one of the things that I was noticing was Ottawa. They, if I remember correctly, when they acquired Browning from Calgary, I think they gave up a lot for him and they paid him a lot. So to see his fall off, it is what it is. But you know, hopefully Ottawa, with all the new acquisitions, they can find their identity. And you know, it's different than a team like Edmonton, who has that camaraderie because they've been playing together, you know. So We'll see, I guess, in November which teams figure it out. But at least for the first opening week of CFL, it's there were some good games.
Yeah. And, yeah, so next weekend it's another weekend of three games. And then, the weekend after that it starts the four-game set. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. And like I said, we'll be talking CFL football for the remainder of the season. And at some point in there, we'll start talking NFL football because training camps are going to be opening up next month. And so the last half of this show, then let's talk CFL. Let's keep going about the CFL. So the CFL starting next year, along with all the rule changes that are coming up next year, they've got a new media rights package, which means it's both good and bad for those who watch CFL football internationally. And that includes all of us because, you know, even though Dave is closer to Canada than he is other parts of the United States. So we got the CFL is signed up for DAZN for Saturday nights. And then so this is where it gets tricky. So that's DAZN in Canada, if I'm not mistaken, right, Dave?
DAZN in Canada and internationally.
Okay.
It's basically everywhere but United States.
Right. So DAZN's only, you can only watch CFL games starting next year on DAZN if you're outside of Canada and the United States.
Just a Saturday night game. The Saturday night, DAZN has one game. It's the Saturday night game. The right. Other games are still on TSN.
Okay. In Canada. But outside of Canada,
yes,
and outside of the United States, all of the CFL games are going to be on DAZN.
Correct.
Okay. All right. And then in the U.S., is it the same thing with CBS Sports Network?
They haven't announced that yet. They've kind of kept the U.S. The U.S. has not been mentioned yet, and I could not find it anywhere being mentioned.
Which is weird because that's where you'd think you would get your most of your viewers. I mean.
I'm curious. Now, this is me speculating.
Yeah.
I'm curious if the U.S. is going to be where YouTube's going to be. Because there's a YouTube aspect of this deal that's just been glanced around.
Yeah.
How they're going to use YouTube more. How they're going to be a platform for video, platform for exposure. And I'm just curious if that's how they're going to go the U.S. way.
Right. Because when they mention YouTube, I'm thinking they're already doing it on YouTube.
Because to be honest with you, they're getting $3 million a year from CBS Sports Network. I don't know what – I mean, the package, the six-year package is rumored between $450 and $500 million.
Yeah.
If YouTube is going to give them – I have no knowledge. I'm making this up.
But more than $3 million.
If YouTube gives them $4 million, why don't you put all the games on YouTube in America?
Yeah. But with that said, I'm just from a technical aspect, it's easy to work around, easier to work around the geo blocks with YouTube with VPNs than it is with.
I understand. Like I said, I don't know the financials. I don't know how at all. But as of right now, I found nothing to say how this is going to happen in the U.S. Yeah. And if they got this much money, I don't see how they go, well, you got $450-500 million over 6 years. Okay, CBS Sportsnet, we'll take your $3 million a year. Like I just don't see how that happens.
Okay. Yeah.
That's just me personally. I don't know. I just don't see how they're getting a huge windfall from all the other places and then
being left out in the state, you know, state.
Yeah. Side. And then, where they're probably their second best ratings outside of Canada would be the United States. Yeah. They're going to just stick with CBS. I don't know. Maybe that's a ploy to get ESPN back to the table, but now ESPN is international too. So it seems like they don't have a deal yet for the US. So like, why announce it yet? We can do that later.
Yeah. And the way this commissioner has been, he just springs stuff on us on the fans without any notice at all. The one thing about the commissioner is he clearly is doing what the owners want. That to me is a big takeaway, because when, you know, with Ambrosi, when he was running the show, it was very clear that he was on limited time because he just wasn't getting the job done. But the new commissioner, as we've seen, he's you know what, he's more. I used to always say the CFL needs a commissioner much like in the Pete Rozelle mode, and they've kind of got one now.
But it's also the rope you give them. Like, I don't think Ambrosi has anywhere near the rope or the latitude that Stuart Johnson has with them. Like, I just listening to the BC owner when he sat down with Three Down Nation over the weekend, and just listening to like you can hear it in his voice. Like, all nine owners are 100% behind what's happening.
Yeah.
So when you have whoever you hire as your CEO or whoever your day-to-day leader is, and if everybody who makes that decision is right with them, it's easy to get those decisions done. Like, it just seems like that. And he said it great. He goes, Stuart's taking a lot of heat for a lot of decisions that are being made, and they're all being made by the owners.
Yeah.
And he's the mouthpiece. So it's like, when people go, I can't believe Stuart Johnson's got rid of the 55-yard line. He didn't. It's the nine owners. He's the one who gets paid a lot of money to go, by the way, we're getting rid of the 55-yard line. Yeah, we're moving. And you can tell in that conversation, these are all things that the owners have wanted to do for a long time. They wanted to move the goalposts back. Like, everything that they're doing. And like I said, it probably wasn't unanimous the day they said it, but you can tell. They wanted to get this done, and you're our guy to do it. Get it done.
Yeah. Well, and it kind of goes into my next thing. Mike, before I go into the next thing, anything you want to add?
So I'm just curious, and maybe one of you guys would know more. I'm hearing rumblings about the potential of Windsor getting a franchise. Have you guys heard anything about that?
No, but Quebec City is the one, that the city that seems to be not only in play, but I'm going to be honest with you, the most likely and practical and obvious, because I didn't realize how big Quebec City was. And I've been there before. I didn't realize just how big Quebec City is. It's like the eighth largest city in Canada.
Yeah. Now, I've not heard Windsor either, but I tell you something, there's a lot of money there.
Yeah.
You have it's a great border city. And I say, you know what? I'll make it by 2035. Let's bring in Quebec. Let's bring in Halifax. Let's bring in Windsor and get to 12 teams.
Yeah.
And have two conferences of six. You can put Windsor in the West, even though it's an East, but it's the farthest West of them.
Right.
Let's go 6-6.
Yeah. Windsor to me makes the most sense, because in those numbers, in the population numbers, it doesn't take in, well, Windsor especially, doesn't take into account for the whole Detroit area.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, Detroit is basically a Canadian suburb.
Yeah. And I think the fact that they're getting rid of 20, 25 yards to shrink that field, you're going to have the probability, you're going to see a lot more of those touchdown Atlantic or touchdown Pacific. You have a lot more opportunities because a lot more fields are smaller than what the Canadian Football League needs.
Yeah.
I just think that's just going to grow and give so many more opportunities. And if they can put together the finances to make it happen, bring them all in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me ask you guys this. Now that the CFL is adapting these new rules with the field goal post and then getting rid of the 55-yard line, will the college level be doing that as well?
You know what? That's a good question. I was, you know, before I went to bed last night, you know, I got sucked down the rabbit hole on CFL social media, and people were asking the same, you know, well, what about, and bottom line is, from what I, you know, the universities and the high schools are going to do what they want to do. But I think with the CFL taking the lead with getting rid of the 55-yard line, in the next year or two, you're going to see the other league, you know, the college and the high school and even the junior leagues go to where go with the CFL, a new CFL regulation field, maybe not go to US standards, but at the very least, just shortening the length of the field, not the width, keeping the width. To me, that makes the most, it seems the most logical. And I haven't talked to any of our Canadian Football League podcasters about this yet. So that would be a good topic to bring either like Howie Mooney back on, Don and the rest of the guys over at the Third Down Gamble podcast to get their input and see what they think. Cause I haven't, you know, I got to catch up on my CFL podcast this week, but
I think to answer your question, from what I remember when they announced the field changes, Stuart Johnson said that any CFL team who plays in a facility that is shared, like Montreal shares it the CFL team is responsible for any field changes that will take place. So financially, the Alouettes are on the hook.
And Sam Calgary.
Yep. I wouldn't be surprised moving forward over the next, say, 2 years, 3 years, that you're going to see with the investment in the flag football, with the investment the CFL individual teams are doing, I think you're going to see a lot of CFL teams, maybe not from the league office, but the teams themselves assisting youth football and university football to get to where they are.
Right.
To make those changes. And I can see a few holding out for a little while, but I think over the course of time, I think it's just going to, the difference is still going to be a 15-yard end zone. You're going to still have a wider field. You're still going to have 12 players and you're always going to have three downs. I think, I think the biggest fear, like even you see it now, the chatter. So it's like, is the CFL going to merge with the UFL? Like,
don't start. I'm getting a headache just thinking the arguments I'm going to get into.
It's crazy. but it's like the nice thing is the owner of BC talked about it. You will have Three Down Nation and you'll have that name for many years to come.
Right.
So they're not, I think the changes that they made was to shorten the field, put the goalposts back.
Yeah.
And move on. I don't see any changes, honestly, after this.
I agree. I'm just thinking, back to that argument. Oh, go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Greg. Let me just play devil's advocate with you guys real quickly. I know it failed back in, 92, 93-ish. But now that the Canadian game is changing their rules to more mimic closer, not identical, but closer to the American game, you guys see a potential 2035, 2040-ish time frame where they start try to tap back into the U.S. market, or do you think that ship has sailed?
That ship has sailed.
I agree.
Yeah, that ship has sailed. It's the CFL, you know, again, we're talking, I mean, that was 30 plus years ago now when the CFL went to the States. If, you know, the history of that is amazing. And enlightening. I know years ago when Scott and I on the show here, when we talked to Dave Naylor, it was very enlightening. And for those that are listening, please go back and listen to our talk with Dave, because we talked all about American expansion. But, you know, back then you look at the stadiums that they went to and how, I mean, Memphis is the clearest example of how not to play a CFL game in a U.S. stadium. Memorial Stadium in Baltimore, fortunately, was wide enough because it was an old baseball stadium. They could fit it in. And if you look at the pictures of Memorial Stadium with the CFL field, they fit it in, but it was kind of barely they fit it in.
I think it was 17-yard end zones.
Yeah, I mean,
it was huge. So it's hard to tell, but it was not 20, but it was close. It was closer than Memphis. Right. It was closer than a lot of places where it was like.
And I never got it, you know, looking on the internet, I've never been able to find a picture of, like Shreveport. Now San Antonio, they could fit a regulation CFL field inside the Alamo Dome. But going back to what you're saying, I think that ship has sailed. And Dave, if they were to expand, do you think it might be closer to the border?
If they ever do that, but now I think the original American expansion was honestly for cash.
Yeah, it was
they needed the money, and now they have 9 solid ownership groups. This TV deal is getting them even closer to being flush. If they're not flush already, depending on how they do their books. But if they will have 10 teams, I think they'll announce the 10th team before the end of the season. I really think they will.
Yeah, I agree.
And then it'll go from there. I think 10 will get them to a really good spot, and then see how these rule changes and see how this deal progresses with the zone. Because I'm really curious to see with this. I mean, it's a pipe dream, but I could see expansion globally before they do the U.S. if the zone does great.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the best shape the CFL has really ever been in. I mean,
in my lifetime, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the problem, first of all, social media is horrible when it comes to being a fan, because you got, and I'm going to call them out for who they are, but you got the old white guys that have been CFL fans, you know, forever, and they're rightly upset. And hey, I don't want, you know, I want to keep the 55-yard line. I don't like a lot of the rule, but the changes are what the changes are. You know, all this, I'm never going to watch the CFL. No, these are the same guys that probably said the same thing when Colin Kaepernick took a knee and they said, I'll never watch the NFL again. And now are watching the, you know, kind of conveniently forgot about that. Football is football, but it's still a 12-man game, still a 3-down game. Yes, the field is shorter by 10 yards, but I'm curious just to see how it's that 10 extra yards is going to affect the game. I personally don't think it's going to affect it much, because once we sit down, once a game gets going, it's football, you know, kind of like with arena football versus regular football. Once that whistle blows, game's on. I mean, you're not really cared about, oh, it's 10 yards shorter. No, I'm worried about my team scoring and getting in the end zone and winning the game. And to me, that's what it boils down.
For me, it's always, excuse me. For me, it's the width of the field is so much more noticeable.
Yes.
Than a 55-yard line. You're watching these games, and the way the camera angles are, it looks like you're throwing the football 5 city blocks. If you're throwing it across the field to the far sideline, it takes forever.
It's like you can see you can see the curvature of the earth a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. And, so with all that said, so I think we've covered CFL and everything, but let's get in. Let's wrap this. Let's go another. It's late over there, but you guys want to do another about 15 minutes here? We can talk, Mike.
You got time, Mike?
You're
all right.
Okay.
So to wrap this whole thing up for our first program for the 2026 football season. We'll call this basically the first show of the 2026, because like I said, football season doesn't, you know, to me, football season really starts when the CFL starts playing. But we had other big news this week, especially in my hometown. The Bears are moving. The Bears are decided we're going to Hammond, Indiana, which for those who are listening to this show and, you know, know of Chicago from social media and what's been on the internet. Them moving to Hammond is, to me, a no big deal, because it's Hammond's still a Chicago suburb, and where they're going to be moving to is like literally feet over the state line. And the whole thing with the Bears getting a new stadium, that's a saga that's been going on for 60 plus years. And finally, it sounds like we finally got it resolved. Dave, Mike, what do you guys think? What's your takeaway?
So I would say, number one, let me preface this with go Pack go. So I'm a Packers fan through and through, but from what I've been seeing, you know, the thing about Chicago is Chicago, the Soldier Field is a historic landmark, so they can't do anything with it. you can't build a stadium downtown, really anywhere else there. So they are, in that essence, kind of landlocked. And the city just, from my understanding, just did not want to work with Chicago. And with that deal in Hammond, it's a $5 billion stadium. $3 billion by taxpayers, $2 billion by the Chicago ownership. It's a 35-year lease. After 35 years, they can purchase the stadium rights for $1, and then they will permanently own the stadium in Hammond. So I think that from that perspective, it's a win-win for both sides. Hammond isn't, the taxpayers of Hammond are not on the hook for the whole bill. I think ownership putting $2 billion up front, I think, is really good. And then again, once that lease is up, they can just buy the stadium outright for $1. All of the revenue earned at the new Bears Stadium is going directly to Bears ownership. So football games, concerts, anything else in between. You know, they're going to have a draft there as well. Whatever the case might be, the Bears organization is getting all the revenue from said events. So I think when you compare that to what they're trying to do in Chicago, I mean, yeah, you want the Bears to stay in Chicago, just because when I think of personally, when I think of the Bears, I think of Soldier Field. I think of truly being in Chicago. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is a business thing. And I think that this move makes the most sense.
Yeah. Dave, thoughts?
I just have two comments. The Hammond, Indiana taxpayers had to pay twice as much as Buffalo, New York. Awesome. And my second one is, honestly, until the shovel's in the ground, this saga's going to keep going.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I am still...
This is just the start of this. This is kind of like, as Winston Churchill said, either the end of the beginning or the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
Until I
still see somewhere along the way, the shovel goes in the ground in Chicago. It's the old ploy of, I have somewhere else to go. Do you want me to leave?
Yeah.
And how many times this works with professional sports? Yeah. All the time. And everyone calls your bluff until you have something. Right. So we'll see. We'll see. Like, I'll be honest, after living through what New York State, like, granted, I grew up in Buffalo. I grew up down the street.
Yeah. Dave's saying, look, oh, there you go. You're back. Go ahead. You grew up down the street.
Sorry. Yeah. I grew up down the street from where the Bills played their original stadium, Rich Stadium. And now across the street's a new one. So for someone like me growing up, it's good to see taxpayer money going in my area instead of other parts of New York State.
Right.
But if I was living in Indiana, I already have the Colts, who were dumping a lot of taxpayers in. It's just $3 billion to say, like, hey, $2 billion is put in by the ownership. That's great. $3 billion is being put in by the taxpayers, who are getting nothing back for it, other than saying, hey, we got the Chicago Bears. Because once again, all the revenue is going to the Bears. Like, I get how these things work, but once again, it's like all the upside is to the billionaires who are getting something built for them on our dime, but they're going to kick in some, but they're guaranteed to make all that back in a couple years, just basically by having an NFL team. And then, oh, by the way, we get all the other ancillary revenue. And then in 35 years, when the stadium is obsolete and we'd be building another one, for a buck, you can buy it, which they never will.
Right.
I mean, yeah. it sounds great. It is.
It sounds awesome. Great on paper and in theory, but the reality is,
either someone's going to get reelected for this, or someone will not get reelected. And that's the game that's always being played by how these things all.
Well, in Illinois, I mean, Pritzker, who is the governor, is running for a third term. He's already said he'll take one for the team. He doesn't mind being the governor accused of losing the Bears. The one only people, the winners in this to me are the state of Illinois, and the losers are the state of Indiana. But the state of Indiana is also the winners because at least they can have bragging rights. We got the Bears, but the ultimate yeah. winner is the Bears because you know
they're going to win regardless,
no matter what.
Whatever, however this plays out, the Bears will win. Yeah. It's how well they
win. You know, again, now you're seeing on social media, oh, I'm never going to go. I mean, okay, so where Soldier Field is at, Soldier Field's a pain in the ass to get to, period. I've been there for concerts.
I've been to Chicago a few times.
Been there for games. Hell, I used to work right downtown about 6 blocks from it. So I know that route very, you know, I know just getting to the city from, you know, just use the west side or really any side of getting to Soldier Field from any side of Chicago is just a huge pain in the ass. And even with public transportation,
it's still Greg. It's still what, a 15-minute walk from Soldier Field to the train station.
Yeah. And that's one of the train stations because you've got, that's the South Shore line. That's the Metra Electric, which goes south. The other train lines come in at different points in the city, like Union Station, Ogilvie Station. So you've still got to hoof it or take a bus or take a Lyft or an Uber to get to that final, especially on a rainy and a crappy day in downtown Chicago, which there are more of those. I mean, you know, September, October, even kind of November, weather's usually not bad, but man, you get in those winter months and everything my brother goes to a game at least once a year. And, you know, some years it's, it's great. It's an autumn game against the Vikings. No problem. But then there are other times I'm like, dude, Vikings, Bears in December? No, sucks for you because, and he's coming from the south and he's coming up from the south. So the Bears moving to Hammond, you know, at least, I mean, it's closer to my hometown. But if they would have gone to Arlington Heights, and there's still possibility, they still might, that's an even harder place to get to. Depending upon where you're at in the city, though. But with all that said, you look at the economics of everything. Who is going to these games? Who can afford these tickets? I guarantee you it's not the people living on the south side of Chicago, which Hammond is a lot closer to than if the Bears would have built in Arlington Heights. Because where Hammond's at is the far south suburbs, and that's the poor area of the suburbs. I mean, by leaps and bounds, the economics, I mean, it's just a lot. I mean, you're nearby Chicago Heights, Ford Heights. I mean, I can just go on down the list, and these places are, I mean, these are towns that are, it's sad to go through it. It's heartbreaking to see the poverty. And that's on the Illinois side. But then on the Indiana side, Indiana, the other thing too with this whole thing, Indiana is a much better, in terms of finances, is much better shaped financially than the state of Illinois. I mean, they've always managed their money well. And then, you know, across the border in Indiana, taxes are lower. Gas is significantly lower when you go to fill your tank up. Plus, you can buy fireworks in Indiana too.
To be honest, we're looking at the financial ecosystem that is the NFL. They're not building a stadium in Hammond, Indiana for anybody in Hammond, Indiana.
Exactly.
I mean, have they announced a capacity for the new stadium?
If they have, it's escaped me, and I didn't even pay attention to it.
Buffalo maxed out at 60 because it's not about getting a lot of people. It's about getting less people. But having them pay a whole lot more. They raised over $50 million. It might be close to $60 million just in personal seat licenses.
So, Dave,
they basically stole that.
Let me ask you, Dave, from what I read and from my understanding, there's fewer PSL opportunities at the new stadium than the old stadium. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, there's... Well, the original stadium had 80,000 seats. Then it got scaled back to the mid-70s, then down to 72,000 at the end for more luxury seating. And then this, the new stadium only has 60,000 seats.
Only so what, 60,000 or like 65,000?
Yeah, 60.
So does that? So by my understanding, they're going to price out the lowest bidders for the season ticket holders, and it's really going to be the 1% of the 1% that of season ticket holders that's going to be able to afford the new PSLs and season tickets for the new Bills stadium. Is that fair?
Yep, and they sold them all out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep. Sold them all out.
So basically, the NFL doesn't. It's all again. It boils down. It's all about the money. Ticket sales don't matter anymore.
Yeah. It doesn't. And the thing is, and this is a planned state of business for them. We want to keep shrinking our stadiums. And baseball is doing it too. Baseball's in the 30s. Yeah. Most of the new stadiums are under 40,000. It's less people there, making them pay more, and then we'll deal with the rest. Because at the end of the day, and this is, we're getting to the minutia, and we're I don't want to take too much more time, but before any game is played, every NFL team has made $200 million in profit from the media yeah. rights, you right. know, they have. So before a game is played, you paid all your salaries, and you're still sitting at close to $200 million yeah, in your pocket.
It's all gravy after that.
Because each team is getting between almost $450 million a year, each team, for wow. media rights.
Wow.
So guess what? Cutting 12,000 people out?
Yeah.
That's okay. We just made $60 million in PSLs. Yeah. Ticket prices are through the roof because now all that PSL does is – now you can buy the tickets if you'd like at this price. And if you just coughed up $2,000 per seat license, you're not going to buy the season tickets now?
Yeah.
Like it's laughable. Like, so yeah, so it's the way it is. And Buffalo has been saved at that for a long time, but there was a lot of resentment for it when it first came out. But if you want to see the Bills and the Bills are peaking, this is how you have to do it. It'll be interesting in 7 years when Josh Allen is no longer there. That'll be the interesting time
when the cycle reverses itself with every team when they're on that downside.
But the PSL has been sold. They're yours, and I know a couple of my buddies, and I'm kind of making fun of them on this, but it's like they all bought it. Well, it's an investment. I go, yeah, it's an investment if someone gives you the money
right.
for it. Like, it's not an investment when Josh Allen retires or Josh Allen gets traded, and all of a sudden you're going to try and sell that $4,000 seat license to somebody.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I always say, you know, I mean, we're at a point now where the only place that, I mean, the NFL proved that they don't need fans in the stands during the pandemic, and they still made a profit. But with all the other leagues, attendance is still counts for something, both at the CFL and the UFL level, even if it's just for optics. So hopefully, we'll return to the subject here in the coming weeks. And, with all that said, any final thoughts before we sign off?
I think in the next,
Mike, have a great weekend.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to, flying out to DC, and I think we're going to see some great football to finish out the UFL season. And then all eyes are on Canada. So it'll be fun to watch, and stay tuned. I'll do my best to give a post game report there at Audi Field. And we'll see if there's any familiar faces I run into along the way.
All right. And with all that said, so next week, it'll be Dave and myself. And then hopefully, Mike, we're going to be able to get you to do a live, you know, to dial in live from where you're at, either in the stadium or outside of the stadium. Because what time is the game next week?
I believe it's at 3 or 3:30.
Okay. Well, we'll shoot. We'll figure this out before we plan our next recording. But, yeah, we're going to hopefully do, you know, we'll plan our next recording for the day of the UFL championship so we can, you know, to have Mike do a live remote. And so on behalf of Dave, Mike, myself, hey, everybody, thank you very much for tuning in to Gridiron America. And we'll be talking to you again next week. Bye-bye.
This is George Connor of the Chicago Bears. Bear down, Chicago Bears. sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.